Welcome to the Vote Her podcast, because when you vote, great things can happen. I'm Mara Davis, and today I am all up in Taylor Swift's business, like for real. This is, you know, I'm a true Swiftie, and today is the day.
Yeah, I'm Jen Jordan. I have birthed a true Swiftie, but I'm too tired and too old, apparently, to really be able to appreciate her. But I'm sure Mara will tell us everything we need to know. Right, Terry?
That's right. I am Terry Yanelowitz. I'm a state representative in House District 42 in Cobb County, and I am a Swiftie enough to be going to see the Eras Tour this summer. But I am also smart enough to know that I need to be friends with the really, really dedicated Swifties like Mara, like my friend Johanna, who they will tell me which songs to listen to first, because 31 songs is a lot of songs. And I was asleep when it dropped last night.
The thing that really messes my daughter up the most is when I say to her that I'm closer to Taylor Swift's age than she is. She does not like that at all.
But she's true.
Yeah, because she thinks that she and Taylor are like BFFs, and like I'm some kind of old lady. So I'm like, whatever, you know.
Well, I'm older than everybody, and we're recording this on Friday, and I am that crazy where I woke up and I got up at like 4 and then just started listening to it. So it's, but, and I've gone through it like twice now. While I'm doing my jobs. So let's talk about politics, because that's what we're here for. There are enough Taylor Swift podcasts. Actually, there are never enough Taylor Swift podcasts. I listen to several of them, one including Taylor Swift Every Single Album, if you need a recommendation. Let's go straight to Terry. Terry, you have been campaigning. I have been watching. Now, we all got together about a week ago, but in the interim, you have been campaign crazy. Tell us all about this.
Yes, I have a primary campaign. Early voting starts on April 29th and Election Day is on May 21st. So yeah, we finished the session in March. We had spring break, which we have a new puppy at our house, so we really didn't travel anywhere. I spent most of spring break compensating for half-baked parenting during the session. And then I went head on into primary season. So I've been fundraising. I've been knocking on doors. I have been getting mail pieces ready to go out, keeping up with the social media and going to a lot. I mean, I'm always going to a lot of events in the district, but I'm making sure I go to even more events in the district. And I live in a district where there are a lot of events. And so I have been spending a lot of time in the car and with constituents and just trying to, you know, I think, and maybe I don't toot my own horn enough, but I think I have a very good, solid record at the General Assembly. And I think I've done a good job, and hopefully I have earned the votes of the people who live in this House district and who vote in primaries. Interestingly, it is mostly women. It's actually really mostly women. It's more than 60-something percent women over age 30 who are typically votes in the primaries in this district. And I hope I have earned their vote again.
Toot, toot, toot that horn.
Toot, toot, yeah. Toot, toot.
Look, yeah, it's kind of hard. It's hard to talk about. It's a weird thing, because I don't think folks know that every little thing that we, when I was serving as a state senator, and then, you know, you're a rep, and of course we served in tandem because we represented the same areas.
Right.
Your House district was within my Senate district. So everything we did really was together. I remember all the town hall meetings we had, and all of, I still remember the one on transportation. I mean, just compelling, compelling stuff. But it's one of those things where I don't think folks know all of the little things, the calls, the, you know, going out and seeing people, you know, making sure certain things happen or get done. And so, you know, I think it's a good thing that you're tooting your horn. I mean, that is really what campaigns are supposed to be for, because you're supposed to tell folks, this is what I've done. And if you like this and want to continue this, then you need to vote for me again.
Well, that's right. And I think it's too, I mean, it's almost like a women of a certain age thing, right? Like, I don't know if we were necessary. We were brought up to succeed, and we were brought up telling, you know, being told we could do anything. But we were also told, you know, you don't want to get too big for your britches. You don't want to, you know, you don't want to be bossy. You don't want to do this. You don't want to do that. And so I think
that's hard.
It is really hard to get outside of that comfort zone. And a lot of it too might just be a Gen X mentality. It's like, look, we're doing the work. We're used to people not recognizing us, and we've been told not to recognize ourselves. But I will say we've redone the website. My website's been totally revamped. www.terriforgeorgia.com, TerriForGeorgia. And I was going through the list of legislation that I've sponsored and co-sponsored. I was like, huh, there's a lot of stuff here. There's a lot of stuff here, and it's good stuff. And one thing, I was actually in an event last week with Eric Allen, who is a former state representative, and he's running for the county commission in the district where I live. And I said, you know, one of the things we do, I said, and one of the ways where I can measure success as a Democrat, right, because I'm in the minority party, so there's a math problem. But we've been able to, and I've been able to help make a lot of bad things less terrible. And that might sound like a weak thing, but, you know, when I'm talking about on the Government Affairs Committee, for example, and we're able to make bad election bills less bad, that's actually, that's a victory, right? Like on the Public Health Committee, the fact that we were able to keep all of those anti-trans, anti-LGBTQ bills locked up in a drawer this session where they never made it to the House for a vote, that's definitely a victory. So we've been out, I mean, I've been out there, and other Democrats, we've been out there doing good work, and it's hard, and it can be very demoralizing because the numbers are against us and we're in the minority party. But I think we've been able to make Georgia, you know, I think we've been able to affect policy in a kind of in a good way and have some positive changes.
Well, you know what, Terry, from an outsider looking in, as far as like just following all your social media and knowing you and everything that you're doing, I feel like in a weird way that this is invigorating you in your political career. I feel like, you know, you've been someone who's run unopposed for a long time, and now you're suddenly like a fire's lit underneath you. Not that you need a fire lit under you, because you are a constant like flamethrower. This to me is like, I kind of love it, because I feel like, okay, maybe the aspirations go higher. Maybe we get a little bigger. And she's saying no, and I'm saying yes. Why no?
I like Cobb County. I like Smyrna. I don't even want to run for anything countywide. It's a big county. That's like a lot of places. I like my community. I feel like I've done a lot of good stuff for my community. You know, I'll lend my voice and I'll campaign for other folks, but I don't see anything larger in my
future. Right. Well, it's a good look. I like everything that you're doing. It's great. And we're all rooting for you. Jen is nodding her head and agreeing with me.
Yeah, no, look, I think it is great. I mean, look, I've had some issues through the years with Terry not having vigorous challenges in terms of her campaigns, since I feel like I was on like a hamster, you know, wheel for years and years. For
you were
so many challengers that were well funded and like knockdown drag outs, and you know, but it's like it does make you kind of reassess. It makes you say, okay, it's almost like a makeover. It's kind of goofy. It's like you have to get new pictures, and you have to think about, okay, what have I done? What are my priorities? Because obviously when you first run for office, and what you think you can do or what you think the job is very different 5 to 6 years later when you've been in the office and you know what the realities are, and you also know what you're good at and what you've actually been able to deliver for your constituents. And so I think that it actually is a good time to kind of have a reset and say, all right, well, what are my priorities kind of looking forward? So I'm excited for you, even if it really is a pain in the backside to have a challenger.
It's good for democracy. Yeah. It makes for better candidates. And it was good. It was a good evaluation to sit there and go through the giant spreadsheet of legislation that I have sponsored and co-sponsored. I've been able to pass bills, which is no small feat for a Democrat in this state. And, you know, that's important stuff. And then again, like, yeah, what is my role in the community and in the county? And how have the priorities of the district changed? Because the pandemic, you know, I was in office just like you were, Jen, before the pandemic. We were there during the pandemic. And now what has changed and what is the same? And like one thing that's the same, of course, is childcare. One thing that's changed is the status of course, our reproductive rights in Georgia.
That's right. That's right. And you know what? Let's segue right into that. Arizona, or as I put on the rundown sheet, Arafuckinzona. Okay. This is, you know, I know our listeners have been following the news as far as like they're going back to an 1864 law of no abortions, no rape, no incest, no nothing. Civil War era, back on the books. Handmaid, it's like even worse than Handmaid's Tale, really. But the question is, I have a couple things I want to run by you ladies. Number one, I feel totally, and I've talked with Jen about this. I feel totally helpless. I feel like abortion rights are being rolled back so bad. I'm so outraged. I'm on Twitter. I'm screaming into a void. I feel like we need to do a march. We need to do activism. We need to do something. So that's number one. And number two is this going to move the needle with the election? I mean, everybody seems to think this is it. This is like, it's been successful every other time it's been on the ballot. But what are we looking at here?
Well, I think the problem is, especially in Georgia, it goes back to that whenever we have elections, it isn't just about abortion, right? And the incumbents here, who are Republicans, they control the messaging in terms of, you know, what the press covers. And then they also are the ones that have the money in terms of buying paid messaging. So they really kind of put a thumb on the scale in terms of the prominence of abortion, you know, in terms of an election. I think with respect to Arizona, it's been clarified, right? It's been, that's like such a cray-cray thing to have happen. And then what's happening out there too, and I think this is the more important thing for people to really pay attention to, because I think this is a problem across the board for Republicans, is that all the years that Democrats were really struggling with issues around abortion, because it's not, if you're pro-choice, it doesn't mean we all think the same thing in terms of pro-choice, right? There is a range. There are people who believed and thought that the framework established by Roe v. Wade was appropriate. There are some people who believed that up to first trimester was appropriate. Some folks believe in a lot of restrictions. Some people believe in no restrictions. And that's within the choice community, right? The pro-choice community. And so we always had a lot of issues because we were kind of fighting within, even Democrats were fighting with Democrats in terms of, well, where, what's right and what's wrong, you know? And so it was always easy for Republicans just to be like, no, pro-life. All right, now here we are. Here we are. And all of a sudden, what they are realizing, what Republicans are realizing, is that they're not a monolith either. And they've got the far, far right folks who believe that abortion under no circumstances is ever okay. Kill the mama, whatever, we don't care. To folks who really are like, well, you know, rape, incest, you know, absolutely, let's have some exceptions, or let's just pull it back, or whatever it is, right? And so even within Republicans now, they can't get their act together. So you've got this situation, for example, in Arizona, where you would think, we got this crazy Civil War law. Woo, we're going to get that. I mean, let's go fix that, right? Yay, let's all go fix it. They can't even friggin' fix it.
Unbelievable.
They can't get on board with each other. They're fighting with each other. And really, it's kind of this circular firing squad with respect to pro-life Republicans who are now dealing with the issues that Democrats have been dealing with for years.
Wait, Terry, before I get to you, Jen, I wanted to comment on something. I heard you on Politically Georgia. You were on that not 2 weeks ago. And you said something so interesting. And Terry, I'd love for you to weigh on this too. You said something so great. And it was an uncomfortable moment, which
I can't wait. What did I say?
Okay. Bill Nygut, you know, as you know, is a, you know, the reporter here, the political reporter in Atlanta, who I'm sure everybody listening knows, if you don't, look him up, you were saying about like the election in 2022 and abortion messaging. And you pointed out that when Republicans were being asked on that, the press didn't push hard enough. It was just sort of like, I don't want to talk about this now. And the media's like, okay, let's talk about something else. And then he kind of said, oh, are you giving us shit? And you were like, well,
maybe.
Kinda.
Yeah. I think everybody has a little bit of a role to play there. But I can tell you that from my perspective, I know that voters wanted to hear about it and were concerned about it. But look, when the governor of the state of Georgia just basically shuts the conversation down and says, you know, nothing to talk about, right? Nothing to talk about here. That's a real issue in terms of what reporters should have done is actually delved into, well, what are the real implications of this? And the real implications are what we're seeing now, which is the fact that, you know, in terms of our medical schools and their training and all of those issues. And also, by the way, nationwide, we are going to be dealing with an OBGYN crisis because there people are like, hey, we're already having trouble getting people to be doctors or nurses after COVID. But then with OBGYNs, they're like, why am I going to do that? Like, so like the one kind of profession we really need in order to continue to exist on this planet, right? Somebody to birth babies. That's what we need. Somebody to help mamas and babies. You know, folks don't even want to do that anymore because they feel like they're under attack and they're not being supported. And specifically, they feel like they can't give the care to their patients. So those are the stories. Instead of just this kind of, well, he said he's pro-life and she said she's pro-choice, it's like, what are the real implications in terms of policy on the ground when this stuff gets decided? And that could have made for incredibly compelling reporting. And instead, you know, they went for kind of the lower hanging fruit, which is, you know, he said no comment, right? But then decided to talk about how awful Joe Biden is. It's like, give me a break. It's like, why don't you talk about the things that are happening to people in Georgia right now or what the implications for public policy are going to be because of these bad choices that incumbents have made?
Terry, do you think that's going to change in this cycle?
No, I don't. I think that the Republicans would like, in Georgia at least, want to not talk about abortion at all because they know that they are in a bit of a pickle. And when we saw what happened next door to us in Alabama with their Supreme Court basically saying that you couldn't have IVF anymore because an embryo was a person, and they realized they had really gotten themselves painted into a corner. I mean, you have to remember, these are a lot of these Republicans, when they voted to restrict abortion in Georgia, didn't ever believe that Roe would ever be overturned by the Supreme Court. And so they voted for something that they didn't have to think about, right? Because they never thought Roe, they never thought anything would go into effect. They never thought that House Bill 481 would ever go into effect. So they voted for it without thinking about it. Now they've got to think about all these things, right? Not only do they have to deal with the factions in their party who do want to restrict contraception and who do want to restrict IVF. Yeah, they've got to answer and they've got to figure out what their answers are to all of these questions that Jen's exactly right. Democrats had to figure these things out a long time ago. And so it is something I do think they want no comment on. And I do think they want to not talk about because it's really hard. And they have, you know, they've got folks in their party who want to absolutely abolish any kind of reproductive restrict anything having to do at all with eggs and sperm. And then they've got a lot of women, especially women who they're trying to keep in their fold, who are very concerned because they realize what a lack of access to abortion means, but also what a lack of access to all kinds of reproductive health care means. And so, you know, I think that they're going to keep saying no comment. And I do agree with Jen that the journalists need to continue to press questions. There was a report in the AJC this week about how many millions of dollars in tax revenue the state lost out on because of the ridiculous tax, like you get to claim your fetus as a dependent, right? And that's many, many, many millions of dollars that didn't go to the state. And what kills me about that is when the heartbeat bill, when House Bill 481, whatever you want to call it, was moving through the House, a lot of people said, well, heck, why don't you get, if it gets, you know, if it's a person right in the HIV lane, get the tax deduction. And the sponsors were like, oh yeah, that's a really good idea. Because again, they never thought any of this stuff would ever come to pass. Well, now it's real. And now we're a state where people are getting to claim a deduction for their unborn child. And it's ridiculous. They're not going to walk that back either, because that would mean opening up a whole section of code again. But yeah, they don't want to talk about it, but they have forced the conversation.
So I wonder about this. I'm sort of on the fence with both of you, because I look at it from a media standpoint, and this is the narrative of this election, is that this is a game changer. And this means that talking about the subject gets a lot of clicks and it gets a lot of ratings. So I believe that they're not going to be let off the hook. I think they're going to be forced to talk about it when they're on panels, when they're doing all this stuff.
Yeah, but for Republicans in this state, that's fine for them, right? Because what do we have this year? We don't have any statewide elections. The only elections we have, and remember, we are talking about how gerrymandered we are. So if a Democrat is in office in a Democratic, if a Democrat's in office, it's because they are in a Democratic seat, right? There are not competitive seats. So it doesn't matter for Republicans this year in terms of the state.
But what about in Arizona? And what about where it's on the ballot, or like Florida?
Look, I think in other places, absolutely. I think it is, especially in a place like Arizona, that is always on the line, right? It is a real blue-red, you know, flippy state, and really a real difference there, especially, and let's talk about that, the U.S. Senate race there, where we have Kristen Sinema, who is retiring. Thank God, you know, talk about wacky dacky. It's like, who's that lady? And so, you know, the voters there are actually going to have a real choice between a Democrat and a Republican, and they can make a decision. And I think that with respect to what's happening in Arizona, it is absolutely going to impact that U.S. Senate race. And it may mean a pickup for Democrats in a state that in a normal year, probably would have gone to Republicans.
Yeah. Well, and I think in Arizona, it's especially compounded. So in Alabama, when their Supreme Court made IVF basically illegal, their General Assembly, their Republican General Assembly, immediately went into action and made sure, you know, they passed legislation where IVF would not stop happening in Alabama. In Arizona, on the other hand, the Arizona Supreme Court issued this ruling, and the Republicans in their General Assembly blocked legislation that would have reopened the right to have an abortion in that state, that would have overruled that 19th century law. And they decided not to. And that I thought was really fascinating, because that is not going to help the Republican in that Senate race.
And then they cheered. That was the most gross display of that. But I wonder in Florida, because Florida, as we've learned, is going back to the 6-week abortion ban, but then they have a referendum coming up. And that to me is very interesting, even though, you know, everybody's like, okay, Florida is definitely gone to be, I've heard the pundits kind of go both ways. They sort of feel like in Florida, it's not really going to help Democrats, that it's gone so red that it doesn't matter, that they may vote on that referendum, and that may clear the path for them to vote for other Republicans.
I mean, look, Florida, you want to talk about a state that has just completely changed.
Wacky dacky
in a short period of time. I mean, and it's a large state too. In some ways, let's let it go, right? Just it's already, the seas are rising anyway, right? Ocean levels, just
let it sink.
Let somebody take it, right? But it's one of those things where even to run in Florida competitively is so friggin' expensive. And so in some ways, taking it off the chessboard actually could help Democrats, because we're not going to be sinking so much money into a state that is not gettable at this point. It may be in the future, but in terms of the influx of the people actually moving into Florida, It is not going to become more balanced anytime soon.
Yeah, so that's going to be interesting to see, because I wonder, I mean, already the Biden campaign put out that really poignant ad. If you haven't seen it, you can definitely look it up. And it's just, it's a young couple. And it just talks about how she had a, you know, problematic pregnancy and she didn't get the care she needed. She lost the baby and she likely lost her fertility. And it's those ads are very, very effective. And in some of the other states where the referendums were so positive, those, like, I think it was Kansas, those commercials, those ads were running like crazy. I mean, they're going to be run. Would you advise the Biden campaign to just go full on with those everywhere?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, look, it goes back to what we've talked about time and again, which is every woman we know has a story, right? And you can be a Black woman, you can be a woman from the AAPI community, you can be a white lady, you can be rich, you can be poor, you can be in the middle, you can be old, you can be young, you can be in the middle. Every single woman has a story of loss, of wanting to be pregnant, of not wanting to be pregnant, of being pregnant and being sick, of having difficulties, of mourning a loss. I mean, so the more that you message on that, the more that you are going to be effective in terms of touching people, but also making it clear to folks that this isn't just about abortion, right? And that's when we frame it like it's just about abortion or we buy into that frame, that is when Republicans win, right? Mm-hmm. Because then they're like, oh, you're killing babies. That's literally what they say. It's what they've said to me on the state Senate floor. And I'm like, you folks don't know your head from your ass or your head from a vagina. So it's one of those things where the more we can talk about the stories, the actual lived experiences of women, which affect all women across the board, no matter what political persuasion, Midwest, South, California, whatever, the more that you kind of bring those folks together kind of with a common purpose in terms of voting.
Okay, question for you. I want you, Terry, you to take it first. I've said this a lot. As far as pressing politicians, Governor Kemp's brand is Marty and the Girls. It's literally his brand. They are adult women now. They are not children, okay? They are grown women. So at this point, I feel it is a fair question to say, hey, one of your girls is going to the emergency room and is being turned away. I just saw an AP story about this, about how emergency rooms are turning away pregnant women there because they're afraid. They don't want to get in the mix of that. So, like, is that right to say, well, what if it were one of your daughters? Where do you stand on that?
I think it's a perfectly reasonable question. I mean, he would find a way to not answer. But
he's not going
to
answer that.
No, he's not going to answer the question. But it is, because that this is the same thing that's been happening in the conversations about the right to contraception, right? It's like contraception is used as a lot more than just birth control. It's used to control acne. It's used to regulate cycles.
Period cramps.
Oh my God, yeah. I'm perimenopausal and I had to go back on hormonal birth control even after my
husband. Really?
Yes, because I was having, I mean, I'll just go there, right? In 2020, on top of everything else in 2020, I had like 17 periods.
Wow.
God help you.
Yeah, on top of all the other stuff. And they were like, they were like the ones where you need the big purple tank tops, right? Like, ladies, you know what I'm talking about. And so my OB was like, you've got to go on the pillow. It's like, well, this sucks. My husband just got a vasectomy. And
wow.
Yeah, no. So contraception is health care, right? And if you're going, and I remember I was doing a press conference yesterday with legislators from across the country. And one of them said that when they were talking about their right to contraception bill, one of the women who testified is the mother of a developmentally disabled daughter who cannot speak and so who certainly cannot consent. And we know, and Jen knows this too, like the data is there. If you are developmentally disabled or intellectually disabled, you are at very high risk of sexual abuse. That is the reality. And the mother was explaining to this group of lawmakers, like, the reason why my child needs to be on contraception is because there is a statistical risk that she might be sexually abused by a caregiver, by anyone. And we need to make sure she cannot get pregnant, because if she cannot consent to have intercourse, we should be trying to make sure that if anyone takes advantage of that, she's not able to get pregnant. Like, stories like that have to be told, you know, stories about the 11-year-old incest victims who aren't going to be, we're going to have to carry a child to term and they're don't even know what's going on. And a lot of times they're in a state where they can't even talk about sex ed in the grades where that child is already having their period. I mean, it's absurd, but the reality is that these doctors are absolutely like, they don't want to go to jail. And I think if Brian Kemp were to say anything, if you were asked that question, he would say, well, we have exceptions written into the law that's on the books in Georgia, but we know because we've been hearing from doctors and doctors testified to this in the committee meetings when the bill was originally being voted on. These doctors are not lawyers. They don't have lawyers with them. They really don't want to go to jail. And so they are going to, they're going to opt to either be very conservative and wait until the mother is septic and is actually about to die before they can intervene, or they're not going to intervene at all.
Yeah, final point on this. What do we do? I mean, should there be a national march? Should there be an uprising? I feel like, I remember, and I think this was sort of brought on because I read the book, The Women by Kristen Hannon. It's all about the Vietnam War and women in the Vietnam War. And I was so moved by it because, back in Vietnam, and of course, pre-social media, pre-everything, the people really, there was uprising in those times. People got up and they spoke out and they showed up and they made a difference. And it took them years, of course, and the times were different. And people were dying, for no good reason, but people are dying here for no good reason. And I don't know. It's so disheartening to not feel like you can do anything.
Well, I have to tell you, I do not like marches. I've never liked marches. I'm not a marching person. I really am not a crowd person. I know it's very bizarre. It's just kind of my thing. But I will tell you, and I totally believe this, especially as someone who ran and served and it was hard. And it was a sacrifice, a sacrifice for me, a sacrifice for my family, whatever. But the only way to change things is for women to run for office and to hold office, and for a lot of women to do that, because it doesn't. It's great if you elect a Jen and a Terry, right? But really, you got to elect about 20 Jen and Terrys, or 30 or 40 or 50 for it to really make a difference. And, around the edges, in terms of what Terry was saying, we could stop bad stuff or do what we could around the edges. But ultimately, it is a numbers game. And if you don't have the numbers, then you can't pass stuff and you can't stop stuff. And if women are really concerned, if young women are really concerned, if young men are really concerned, then they need to run for office and they need to make clear that this is one of the things that they're really going to push, which is to make sure that, women can have control of their bodies and their lives.
Yeah. They need to vote. They need to vote.
I'm jumping ahead.
Yeah. No, women have to vote, and they have to vote in every single election. They have to vote. I mean, election day is not just every 4 years and it's not just every 2 years. I'm going to vote probably 5 times, maybe more, if there are any runoffs in the districts where I live this year. You've got to vote every single time and you've got to tell your story. And I think the women who are realizing this, who I've seen the most, it's with reproductive rights and it's also with common sense gun safety. And there are a lot, especially in Metro Atlanta, and especially women who they might have voted purely on economic priorities before. And then after the Covenant shooting happened, especially, and after Uvalde happened, they were like, okay, our kids aren't safe, even if they're in the poshest private school in Buckhead. And they realized quickly when they started talking to a lot of the Republicans who are elected statewide, but also in their communities, that no Republican was going to have their back on common sense gun safety, right? So they've become very engaged and they're voting and they're also telling people that they're voting. That's the thing too. And I think it's, we talked about women, in our age range, but it's not impolite to talk about voting. It's not impolite if you have, whatever kind of platform you have to, if you're a fashion influencer, for example, but reproductive rights are important for you, it's okay to use that platform to tell your followers that this is a priority to you and that it should be a priority for them. One, people just need to hear other people talking about things that they're thinking about. But two, we already know the Tradwives are out there using their platforms to get people to vote in a certain way. We know that there is an organized, and this is where I feel like I'm putting on my tinfoil hat. We know there is an organized effort to spread misinformation and disinformation about the safety of oral contraception, because that is happening. And it's happening in the same organized way that the anti-vaccine movement has worked. And so we've got to use, every woman has to use her platform also, and they have to vote. Women have to vote. And they can't just vote on economic issues. They've got to vote for their health and safety.
But it's also an economic issue.
Yeah, that's true. With the OB shortage.
OBs or anything. Being able to freaking keep your job, right? Like, people are going to act like, oh, yeah, you can get pregnant. No, not everybody can get pregnant and have maternity leave and be able to come back to a job and be able to take time off when they're taking care of their kid, or be able to have health care in order to take care of a kid. It's absolutely an economic issue.
Oh,
so
yeah.
One of those things where it's like, all right, get your head out of your ass at whatever country club you're a member of, right? And start thinking about the big picture in terms of if that's what you really care about, or economics is, well, make sure women can actually go to work and make money and then pay taxes, which then benefits you, I guess, if you're some rich person.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, workforce is a major issue statewide. No elected official is going to give a speech, especially no statewide elected official, where they're not talking about workforce, but childcare is inextricably linked to workforce. And yeah. We couldn't, in Georgia this year and last year, we couldn't get a bill passed with basic protections for pregnant workers. I mean, the committee hearing for that was wild. Somebody was like, well, I had a pregnant employee and I gave her a chair to sit in. Like, oh my God, good job. Here's your cookie for doing the bare minimum. Like, we can't get protections passed for pregnant workers.
A chair.
You got our chair.
A chair.
Oh, how chivalrous. That is like, wow, that is as up to date as Arizona's abortion law.
Or like in Louisiana.
You just go back to out to the rice paddy and like you know, drop a couple of kids like when you're standing.
Or get back in the kitchen and make my cake.
Yeah. Yeah. Or like I saw in Louisiana where young workers, they can't, there's no lunch break. There can't be a law for a lunch break for, I have to read that exactly, but I knew it was horrible and it seemed awful. Okay, let's talk about something good. I mean, and as far as the activism goes, I really hope Taylor Swift can save us, because she's one of the few people with that effect of like, you know, here we're recording this on Friday and it's like literally blowing up the internet. Oh, Terry's got a puppy.
She's trying to eat my cord.
Oh, Boykin Spaniel. So cute, by the way. So like, yeah, I mean, I feel like people like that, you know, she is going to use her platform. So it's going to be really interesting. But I think, yes, everybody needs to use their platform. All right. What are we raving about this week? Jen, you want to start?
Sure. I am raving about the beautiful weather in Atlanta. And also I'm raving about, you know, for anybody who has ever lived in Atlanta for any period of time, we are in the middle of festival season. Festival Festivus. I tell you what, you can go to a festival anywhere and they are usually super cool. They all serve beer, have great stuff to eat. And usually you can buy some really cheap jewelry and or ugly art, but it's still a damn good time. So check it out, folks. It's actually a lot of fun.
The Jonquil Festival is going to be this coming weekend in Smyrna.
Good old Smyrna.
Smyrna has lots of festivals. I'm raving. So I've been listening to the audiobook of The Women by Kristen Hannah, which I'm
so good.
Really enjoyed. Julia Whelan is a wonderful audiobook narrator. It's a great story. It is a story that, so it reminds me a little bit of China Beach. Did y'all ever watch China Beach in the early night? Yeah.
Yes.
Goes back to there, which is another thing I'm raving about, which is Northern Exposure is streaming on Amazon, but on Apple TV, I have been deeply, deeply enjoying Palm Royale. It is ridiculous. Ricky Martin is delightful, but the very best part of Palm Royale is Carol Burnett, who, if you ever doubted that she's one of the funniest people who has ever graced this planet, the fact that she can play a person in a coma and be funny is something that I think is amazing about Carol Burnett. She can speak in gibberish monosyllables coming out of the coma and be very, very funny. So I recommend Palm Royale and Carol Burnett, who is a treasure.
Is that funny? I did not love Palm Royale. How about that? I watched the advance of it and had all the, it had all the ingredients of something that I would love because I love all the cast and it is definitely worth watching. But I did not have the same takeaway from that. So so you know what? Report back to us and tell us who's right.
You can't think too hard about it. Like, are there plot holes? Yes. Like, if he's a captain with Pan Am, why can't she pay the motel bill? And why wouldn't he been a captain with Eastern if they lived in Atlanta? Like, there are things like that that I think about. But Carol Burnett and Ricky Martin make up for it.
Okay. So what am I raving about? You all know it's Taylor Swift. Of course it is, because of course it is. Tortured Poets Department has been very entertaining, but I'll pick something else. I finished all three seasons of Girls 5 Eva on Netflix, which is very, very funny.
Love that show.
Really?
I haven't watched it yet.
It's really stupid. If you like 30 Rock or you liked that show, the other two, which is also hysterical. That's good. And then I listened to another book, which I'm going to rave about, and it is called Melania and Me. And it is Stephanie Winston Wilcoff. So she was basically Melania Trump's BFF. And she did all the party planning for the 2016 presidential inauguration. And it is delicious tea. I know we're all in like Trump overload, but like we don't know that much about Melania. And you know, I resisted. It had been in my like wish list for a long time, and I was like, you know what, let me do this. It's really delicious. Ivanka and Melania do not like each other, and that's the spicy part that I loved.
Remember when Ivanka said she was the real first lady?
Yes,
because she was the first wife. May she rest in peace.
Yeah. Yes.
There's a story behind all that.
Oh yeah. You mean Ivana. Ivana said.
Falling down the stairs, and then he just digs a hole at one of his like, you know, golf courses and throws her in. Come on.
Yeah. She was
crass.
Okay. Allegedly.
No, okay. She did fall down the stairs.
I'm saying they
bury her.
Yeah, they buried her at the golf course.
I'm saying somebody pushed her down, allegedly. Okay. Final note, we are scheduled to go to WABE's Politics and Pints. So nerd alert, number one nerd, Senator Jen Jordan was like, we get the group text, hey y'all, I bought the tickets.
Look, we had fun. And it is something we can do together.
I love it. We're all deciding what the name of our team is going to be.
Can give us some...
A team name? Yes. Tweet it to us. But Mike said it should just be called Vote Her Podcast, because then it'll build awareness for the podcast.
I know. I think Greg Bluestein is always super irritated that... Well, he always says it to me that, like, we're not... He's always like, why aren't y'all pushing more or whatever? And I'm like, maybe because we're busy. I don't know. We all have jobs.
I want to tutor in horns.
No, I'm a horn tutor. For
You're
sure.
A professional horn tutor. That's your job.
Right, that's your job.
But I want to do that. We're dear listeners, we are trying. I mean, we're trying to do this. And here we are. So Greg Bluestein appreciated, get us a paid gig on WABE and AJC and we'll be there.
I don't even know if it has to be paid.
I don't know if I can
okay,
be paid.
Okay. There was a delayed response from from my partners here. But I think we could talk about anything, but you know, whatever. All right. So Politics and Pints, we're going to win that. Ladies, anything else before we wrap up?
No, just everybody be nice to each other and, you know, remember, we'll make it to the other side.
Oh, yeah, we will.
Oh, thank God for you guys said that, because I'm breathing into a paper bag some days. All right, we'll talk to you guys next time. Thanks so much for listening.